Hello and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to our podcast on CelticUnderground.net. I'm Harry Brady and this is the latest edition from the world's longest running football fans podcast.
Caught me on a bad day, trying to perform tricks of the silhouette you've known. When you leave this room, it gets dark.
Right, first up, this week's new music is from a Scottish band called Jargo, or perhaps maybe their Spanish relating is Yargo. Anyway, J-A-R-G-O. What you're listening to just now was their debut single, or is their debut single, which was Photograph the Feeling. There will be At Night When the Wind Calms Down on at the end of the podcast. As usual, we will have links to their stuff on SoundCloud, so you can download it, listen to it, do whatever you want. If you want to get your new music on the Celtic Underground podcast, then it's podcasts@CelticUnderground.net. That's podcasts@CelticUnderground.net. Anyway, that's the new music. Listen to more at the end and review it on the site. And also, last week, or last time, I asked you for podcast recommendations. Again, I'm going to start not downloading all that recommendations in the one podcast. So I'll just mention a couple that people have recommended at the end. Suffice to say, Malcolm Gladwell gets much love. But before all of that, we need to talk about the game. By the time you listen to this, it'll be last night's game. Mark Cooper and I discussed it straight after the game last night. He watched it on a dodgy stream in Buenos Aires in, get the words out, Buenos Aires in Argentina. And I watched it in person at Celtic Park, and what a wonderful, fantastic game of football it was. We discussed it at great length, so I'm not going to bore you here. We also discussed the Diddy question from the Scottish media and how they're all, a lot of them are a bunch of Diddies, and don't really talk about the Palestinian flags, because that'll be done to death elsewhere. Anyway, enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady, chatting away about the wonderful game under Brendan Rodgers against the Israelis Hapoel Be'er Sheva with Mr. Mark Cooper.
I guess we're in love. I guess we're in love. I guess we're in love.
So I'm joined by Mark Cooper on a dull, nothing happening evening in Glasgow. And where are you today, Mark?
I'm in Buenos Aires, Harry.
Buenos Aires. Nothing really happening in either bits of the world at the moment.
No, apart from my neighbourhood where we had myself and a pal watching a game tonight.
And to talk seriously, how good was that?
Oof. It was, you know what game it reminded me of? It reminded me of Tyrol Innsbruck. What was that, 6-3 in mid-90s, all over the place?
1996, 20 years ago.
Yeah. Morten Wiekos, even the Brown goal right at the end, goes into the same end, same corner, with Wiekos kind of stretching, the ball's bouncing in the box, Wiekos stretches, kind of not proper volley, but volleys it into that corner. And it's kind of scrappy, but really satisfying at the same time. Scott Brown doing the same thing.
Do you know one of the things I always remember? The reason I can remember that game is because my mum and dad moved house, and I only lived in that house for a month before I moved into my own flat. So I can easily pinpoint when that game was, because that game was on in the month that I stayed in that house. And the thing I remember about it was the commentary. Charlie Nicholas was the summariser. I just remember Charlie Nicholas, when Vikos' goal came in, his summary was to say individual sensation. I don't know why I remember. I think it's because it was an odd phrase, individual sensation. So what did your neighbour think of it?
Neighbour's probably going to make a complaint tomorrow about it. Well, the neighbour next to me, I heard the after the fifth goal went in, the dog was barking or anything, but my pal who came over, one of the things he came away with thinking was that Lee Griffiths is superb.
Do you know what?
And to be fair, if you just watch that game, yeah, you know, Lee's a very good player. Tonight he was excellent.
He was. I mean, I said it's very easy to get carried away after a night like tonight and leaving the ground. And I said to my brother, the one thing that many of us would have accepted last season, that Lee Griffiths is a really good SPFL striker, but nowhere near what we need for Europe. And tonight, he had two goals. Individual sensation. that was Lee Griffiths tonight.
The free kick. I'm not sure if you've seen the goals and the replays yet, but the free kick was like world class. It was unsavable. It's absolutely superb. And so Griffiths also put the through ball for the first goal. When Sinclair's running onto it, Griffiths has kind of got the ball maybe about 40 odd yards from goal, chips it over, and it just kind of, it's one of those chips that almost has a bit of backspin on it, yeah. And it just kind of holds up. Sinclair's running in on the goalkeeper, possibly a foul actually, and then Rodgers puts it away. But the chip was excellent.
Well, do you know, and I actually referred to it as, it was the opposite Reggie Blinker. It was the opposite of Reggie Blinker.
Completely.
He went for it and got, the keeper took him out.
Yeah.
And Reggie Blinker shot it that night.
Yeah.
And that night you were thinking, if the keeper takes you out, it's a penalty. And he's off.
Yeah.
So it was opposite Reggie Blinker. That was, so there's seven goals to talk through and a lot of stuff. So, first up, Scott Brown nearly scored inside the first 5 minutes. He had a shot, angled shot from the left hand side. It was a really good save by the goalkeeper.
It looked from the replay I saw on the dodgy stream I had, because Celtic TV didn't have the game and Argentinian TV weren't showing the game,
right.
So it's on the dodgy stream. It looked like from a replay that it was just going in that far corner. And as you say, the keeper makes an excellent save, just puts the pass post.
So first goal you've just described, Lee Griffiths. Now here's the other point I keep making. So how come he's Sinclair? See, if he was Scottish, he'd be Sinclair.
you sound like my dad right now. For the listeners, I grew up in Buckinghamshire, just outside England.
Hey.
So this kind of thing would come up all the time. Dougie mispronouncing Sinclair, Dunlop, Renfield Street, everything.
Well, his name is I do not know a Scottish person with his surname who would be Sinclair.
Okay, are we going Sinclair then?
His name's Sinclair.
Okay.
I mean, like, Ian St. John is closer to Sinclair. Right, so first goal you've just described, it was Reggie Blinker opposite.
I actually thought it was possibly a foul for them.
So
I've no idea what the commentary were saying about it. I've no idea what the Scottish media have been saying about it. But just watching it on a dodgy stream with foreign commentary, it seemed as though, so the ball goes over Sinclair running through with a 50-50 for the keeper. The keeper seems to palm it, or I'm not sure, maybe slightly outside the box, can't really remember, but he gets a touch on it. The ball kind of goes backwards towards, say, Rodgers. And then Sinclair kind of hits into a goalkeeper and takes out a goalkeeper.
I saw it as the keeper took him out.
But the ball seems to go the opposite way. That, my initial thing was that shouting for a penalty or something off or whatever, and then Rodgers puts it in the net. But the ball goes backwards, as though the keeper's the guy who got a touch. I might be wrong, I was watching it on a kind of fuzzy, dodgy stream.
Yeah, it could have been the stream freezing and going back with some followers for a second. So there's that goal. Then there's the second goal, which is it's great play from Forrest down the right, from my recollection. And this is, there's a couple of things I want to ask you about later on, because when you're at the game, sometimes a goal comes and you've not been expecting it, so you're not following all the build-up play to memorise what happened. But my memory is Forrest down the right, and then a tremendous header down from Griffiths. If you're the, if you're the Israelis, you're wondering how our guy who scored nearly, you know, our guy who scored 40 odd goals last season is allowed to stand and then get a free run on a header. But that's by the by.
Yeah. So it comes from Turi, who I think had done maybe done one of these runs before, about 5 minutes before, maybe. He does a run where he goes past about five or six Israeli guys, right through the centre of the pitch. Sinclair or Sinclair?
We can call him, we can call him Sinclair, even though we all know it's Sinclair.
I'll call him Scott from now on. So Scott,
Scotty. That's what Brendan Rodgers calls him, Scotty.
His movement's very good, and it isn't like fixed to the left side, how you'd kind of, how you'd imagine in, like, say, a 4-3-3, where you have like a high right guy and a high left guy. Mm-hmm. Sinclair seems to be able to be given a license to go almost wherever he wants. So when Toure, you might remember Toure running up about, say, 30, 40 yards in the middle of the pitch.
Yeah, there was two or three occasions he did that.
Exactly, exactly. He then passes right, maybe about a 15, 20 yard pass, slightly to his right, a diagonal pass, and it's kind of, and Sinclair has the ball on the edge of the box, but to the right of the box, which indicates that Sinclair's run about 40 yards from maybe the left hand side as Toure has the ball. So he's on the right of the box. Mm-hmm. Then it almost kind of gets, he wants to go forward, but it's slightly badly controlled, and it's so, and instead of trying to go forward, he kind of makes sure he retains the ball. Forrest is coming down on the right hand side, he feeds it for Forrest. Forrest then kind of does a kind of a check ball, where he kind of stands up the ball to Toure, who's carried on. Toure's probably on about, I don't know, the penalty spot or something.
Right.
And he's hoping that Forrest is going to, you know, cross the ball in for him. Forrest checks the ball back, and if you look in the replay, Griffiths is actually, as Forrest checks the ball back, Griffiths is almost on the corner of the box on the other side, pretty far back, and he then probably makes up about, I don't know, 8 yards or something as this ball is coming. Their right back is just staring at this ball, not moving at all. Mm-hmm. And Griffiths kind of has a run on him, as you say, and gets a really powerful header in it. But really, their right back should have been able to, you know, he should have been aware of where Griffiths was.
And then there's the free kick. Now, see, one of the things about the free kick, my recollection was it's a clear foul. You know, the guy leans on Griffiths and it's a clear foul.
Yeah.
But it's one of those ones where actually what the guy did was no different to what happened to Sinclair. I think it was 1-0 or 2-0, we had a penalty claim.
Yeah.
And it's one of those ones where I accept if we'd have got a penalty, it would have been a really soft penalty. But it's the identical foul that everybody accepts is a soft penalty and it's a guaranteed foul outside the box.
Yeah. I was even surprised he gave, although you say a guaranteed foul, I was even surprised he gave that, almost in the way that it was like right at the end of the first half, and it was a pretty dangerous situation, and it was right on the box, as you say, and I was kind of thinking, ah, we're probably not going to get it. It's just going to
We've not had a free kick goal scorer for years.
It's Someone said that the other day, that we didn't score a free kick the last season. It's amazing. Anyway,
which surprised me, because it was one of the things that I was thinking of. It was the fact that I was thinking about how that whatever his name is, you know, Tavares, whatever his name, Tavernier or whatever, that Rangers have got, that he scores free kicks.
What was the first one?
Tavares, you know, heaven must be missing an angel or whatever. Is there a player for a European team called Tavares? Because he was scoring goals last season, and I thought, actually, see if you're in the position Rangers were in, of being a dominant team where your right backs, where, you know, your defence isn't doing anything, would you be just as well signing an average right back who can score loads of free kicks as anything else? Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's by the by. I was thinking about, why don't we just pick a player who's half decent at it, and then we say, see, for an hour every single day, you're only practicing free kicks. Maybe that's what Griffiths has been doing. Because that free kick was...
It was absolutely sensational. It reminded me of... I don't know if you can probably remember him playing for Hibs at the Hibs end at Tynecastle. I think it's quite late on in the game.
Yeah.
And he hits his 30-yard into that near kind of corner. It was pretty similar to that. It's perfect. It's absolutely perfect. And then at that point, we're 3-0 up, and it seems as though we're through to the Champions League.
Yeah. And then the second half comes. Now, you will be able to, because you watched it, and you get to see replays on television, right? My recollection of the game was two things, right? Two things. See, for about 2 minutes before their goal, I was wanting Tom Rogic taken off. You may not have seen this on the telly as much. He was blown out of his arse.
Really?
Because I was commenting that it was unprofessional that after 55 minutes, he literally couldn't run the length of himself. And I was saying, they're going to get control of the middle of the park because we are playing with 10 men, because there's a guy who can't run the length of himself. Almost as soon as I finished that statement, we had a passage of play. Granted, I'm about to ask if the following faults that my recollection were. So my recollections are, Toure's gone forward.
Yeah.
So obviously
it's a corner, right?
So he's out of position.
Yeah.
But instead of then, when the ball is lost, trying to hold play in that position to give him time to get back to set the position, we sort of meander about at that point. He doesn't break his neck to get past. I remember McGregor sort of pausing for a minute to do that stupid thing that always bugs when a player stands still, because he's got his hand up in the air. Then I remember O'Connell trying to push the guy out wide, but patently the guy's left-footed, doesn't push him out wide enough, and the guy gets a shot away, and Gordon's caught at his near post. Those are the sort of three errors. One was a team tactical error of not holding the play, and the other one was people being at fault. That's my memory.
On the right hand side, kind of almost in a halfway line, as they're kind of clearing away the corner, there's Lustig and Toure are kind of like closing in on I think where the Israelis are. And the Israeli manages to kind of make a pass down the line. And at that point, you're looking at the remaining defenders who are left. And probably Kieran Tierney's closer to the ball than O'Connell is.
Right.
And as they're running back, it seems as though they're running diagonally to go into where their position should be on, you know, as they're set up. Tierney to the left and O'Connell kind of as a centre-back.
Right.
Instead of Tierney probably just sprinting right back. So Tierney's kind of to the right. The position as that ball's being played into our half, into the, maybe I think it's into a Brazilian guy, Lucio. Tierney's probably, I think Tierney's the closest one to him, but he then is kind of running the opposite way.
Right.
It's, I should probably actually have a look at it. But that was my recollection. And then when, so O'Connell, it's not like O'Connell was in that bad a situation. O'Connell kind of more or less has him, I think, maybe 5 yards outside the box or something. And the Brazilian's kind of feinting to go inside about 2 or 3 times.
Right.
That he wants to kind of cut in onto his right foot to have a good angle on goal. And O'Connell obviously doesn't want to let him do that. And as you say, he probably assumes that he's right-footed or something. And the Brazilian boy kind of faints, hesitates until he's about, I don't know, 8 yards away from goal. And he's got enough room just to nudge it forward and then crack it on his left foot.
Then
is
the...
It's a pretty tight angle. I know we were pretty harsh on Craig Gordon on the last podcast, and also since De Vries has come in, people have been slightly critical of Gordon. But it is a pretty tight angle to score.
Yeah, and you know sometimes if somebody just gives it, you know, if they've got power behind their shot and it's taken quickly, then the second goal. I mean, the only thing I can really remember is the ball breaks to them at the edge of the box, and a guy. And there's nobody closing him down, and the guy gets to hit a shot away. But apart from that, I don't really remember what resulted in that or what created that.
From my point of view, it seemed pretty obvious what the guy was going to do. I remember when maybe it's a Brazilian striker. I think it might have been the African striker they had in the pitch, and he's kind of holding the ball with his right foot on the kind of side of our box,
mm-hmm.
as though he doesn't really want to cross it with his left. And he's holding it and he's holding it. And I remember shouting at a TV, track that runner, track that runner. Because you just see this red shirt in about 10 yards of space. And I think Brown is already... I think Brown's covered someone and is already now in a box. And to be honest, I think McGregor probably should have been on that guy. And, you know, it's a fairly simple...
There is nothing worse. I mean, I know as one of the... In fact, very quickly before I get onto it, because the person who once said this to me, his dad won... the guy sits behind me at Celtic Park, and his dad won the £10,000 windfall draw in the North Stand. So one of the conspiracies my brother and I have always had, because in the, whatever it is, 16, 18 years that the North Stand's been open, or whatever, 20 years that the North Stand's been open, I can think of two occasions, 22 games a year, I can think of two occasions where someone within a 1,000-person radius of us has won. So we've been living in the conspiracy world of it takes so long for somebody from the North Stand upper to go down to the pitch to pick up their cheque. They don't put our tickets in. But tonight, somebody from the North Stand upper, and it was the guy who sits behind me, won 10 grand. Anyway, the guy who won the 10 grand, his son used to make the comment of, it's dead easy for us to see it because we're sitting high up and you have an elevated view, and sometimes people are asking for a pass to be made, which it seems easy from where we are and it's different. But there is nothing more frustrating as a supporter that you are screaming, watch that guy who's belting in completely unmarked, ball breaks to him and he puts the ball in the net and you're thinking, I could see it and I'm not paid 20 grand a week. How didn't you see him?
But more than that, I think for me the criticism, not so much on like one individual guy, McGregor, is that it's 3-1, we've just conceded a goal, and that they shouldn't be breaking.
Yeah.
With where our midfield are, what, I don't know, 10, 15 yards beyond their midfield runners. Like it should have been a kind of 5-10 minute period of just like consolidating, calming everything down, and at that point we can kind of go again.
So it's 3-2.
You could even
okay.
Well, just to interrupt you, but you could even kind of sense. I was saying to my pal that even as we had the corner before their first goal, I was saying the kind of whole our intensity and the crowd's intensity. Like I was hoping the crowd were going to kind of get going a wee bit more, because you could kind of just feel it all kind of, you know, calming down.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen this so often, especially in the last, say, 3 years or something in the Europa League, that when the crowd isn't as intense and Celtic players aren't as running as much as, you know, maybe in the big Champions League games, and aren't as pressing and whatever, that if the kind of energy levels go down and the other team just start getting a hold of the game again, then it can become dangerous. And it's just kind of, I don't know, it might sound a bit like bullshit here, but I thought you could just sense it kind of all, kind of, that it was going to be probable that the Israeli team were going to have their first period of kind of a bit of the ball. They didn't actually, they just had two breakaways.
Yeah. Yeah, guy next to me was going nuts that why didn't we come out in the second half and play with the same level of intensity that we'd finished the first half? And there's a part of me thinks, well, that's really difficult to do, because it's a bit like all of us were thinking at 3-0, right, as long as this game finishes the opposition nil, we're into the next round of the Champions League, because they're not going to come back from three, or if we get a fourth or a fifth. So there's a natural mentality, I can imagine, as a player, as you go into the second half of, well, the most important thing here is that we don't leave too much space and commit too far forward. But at the same time, I didn't think we had, as he was bemoaning, I didn't think we'd especially sat back and given them possession to do that.
No, but maybe it was a bit, maybe it's partly due to the crowd. The crowd at that point, the first 10 minutes of the second half, were pretty quiet. And maybe it was more just the kind of perception I was getting from the TV. It wasn't like Celtic had players behind the ball and were being like conservative.
Well, that was my point, because the whole reason we lost the first goal was actually because we didn't have people behind the ball.
Yeah.
So it's 3-2, and then we've got the next two goals. For me, two really outstanding players tonight were James Forrest and Scott Brown. Maybe I'm looking at them as being outstanding in view of how much criticism they've been coming under from the Celtic supporters of late, or in the last wee while. I thought Scott Brown was fantastic, and just drove the team on. And there was also the substitutions that the manager made, you know, to bring on to change it about, to bring on Janko, to. I mean, I was screaming for Rodgick to go off in the 50th minute, just because he looked as though he couldn't run the length of himself, and then to bring Dembele on as well, you know, to go with two up front. He said in the interview, I was listening to it on the way home, he said in an interview afterwards that he thought it was better to go for a fourth rather than hold on to a 3-2, which I have to agree. I mean, at 3-2, I was thinking, we have to make this 5-2. If we want to go through, this has to get to 5-2.
Yeah. Or at least 4. Yeah. At least 4, because a 1-0 win for them in Israel is a fairly kind of almost probable result.
1-0, or even if we score and they make it 2-1. We're out.
Yeah, you're right.
So the fourth and fifth goals.
Onto that corner, the delivery was superb.
It was, and the irony was, because Rodgick had taken the last couple of corners and Rodgick had gone off, We set up for that corner and everybody was standing looking, waiting for Roger to go and take the corner, and then realised there was nobody to take it, and Griffiths trots over to take it. And Brown actually at one point, I thought, was telling to not take it and telling Sinclair to go and take it.
But it was funny when so there's two things about that. The delivery of Griffiths is superb. It's quick. It's kind of in a really dangerous area, just on the edge of the box, 6 yard box, and three other players go up to head the ball. I thought it took me about 10 minutes to realise that Beaton hadn't scored.
At the game, I couldn't work out who had scored because three people could have scored it.
Yep.
Straight away they gave it to Dembele, yet all the players seemed to be hugging Beaton.
And I couldn't celebrate it for about five, ten seconds because I was convinced that the referee was going to give a foul on the keeper.
Yep. I was going to say, was it before that? But it was before the fifth goal. They had a claim, although only one guy claimed for it at the time, for a handball by Griffiths. They'd taken a free kick and the ball, I think, it hit his hand, arm.
Yeah, yeah. It probably did. The listeners on here are probably going mental at me right now because I've said Sinclair has knocked out the keeper, not a goal. It's possibly a foul on the keeper for a fourth goal, and a fifth goal should be annulled and given as a penalty. I'm basically arguing for a 3-2 for Hapwell.
There was only, at the time, my recollection was the guy who took the free kick stuck his hand up for like 2 seconds, but then the ball went back, and from my memory at them, we cleared it up the park, and actually I think Griffiths hoofed it up the park because he knew he had handballed it, but we hoofed it up the park, and it came to their keeper, who then had all the time in the world and played it straight to a Celtic player.
Yeah, it was such a bad pass. It was, and it was like at a strange angle as well, because he's kind of got the ball maybe in the right hand corner of the box, and he plays a kind of diagonal. He thinks he's Pirlo or something. He's trying to make a defence splitting pass, and he makes this diagonal ball, and it goes into right into maybe the centre circle, and it gets intercepted, and Hapwell are all over the place.
And then, again, my memory is some sort of sclaffed half fresh air shot from Scott Brown, that the ball then falls back at him. And he puts it in the corner.
Yeah, so I think
individual sensation.
Martin Vikos scores again. I think it's James Forster's got the ball on the edge of the box. He's got about two or three Israelis kind of in front of him. It's going to be hard for him to score. And he shifts the ball into an on-running Scott Brown, who takes a touch, tries to hit it on his left. It then ricochets off one of the four Israeli defenders. And they're absolute statues, like in Griffiths' header, where the guy doesn't move at all. Brown's hit the ball, bounces off one of them. There's four of them there. It bounces. Brown kind of launches himself towards a ball a second time, hits it with his right, and it's a goal.
It's a great goal. It's not just a goal, it's a great goal.
And it's a great performance by Brown.
Yeah. So, at the game, my gut feel was that Brown had a brilliant game, James Forrest had played well, Sinclair had maybe faded a bit towards the end of the game. Who were your standouts?
Sinclair almost got us a sixth, I think. So he gets a ball. He hasn't done much for about 20 minutes, but he gets a ball on the touchline, and he's running down the touchline, and then he cuts in. Keeper comes out.
Oh, yes, that's right, aye.
And he hits it with his right, and the keeper just saves it. I think Griffiths is... as he hits it, Griffiths is maybe calling for a ball just behind the penalty spot.
Yeah, Griffiths is more or less in the penalty spot. If he cuts it back, Griffiths can't miss. Yep. Equally, he's running head down, cutting in on goal. He then it's him and the goalkeeper in the goal. A player of that quality, you'd be surprised if he doesn't give it a go himself. Part of the reason for my voice is the only criticism I have of James Forrest in the game is this voice all comes from the 2.5-3 minutes into injury time when the ball had broken to Forrest on the right and he went down the right hand side and then cut in and lost the ball. And you're thinking, it's 5-2 with about 90 seconds to go of injury time. Why are you cutting inside? Why didn't you just keep going to the corner flag and then hold it in? So that would be my only criticism of that. That type of slight naivety of, hey, there's 90 seconds, it's 5-2. They need to win 3-0, 4-1 or 6-2 to go through. None stupid, mate.
But as you say, he did have a very good game, and he looks a bit sharper. He looks quicker, and he looks a wee bit more direct, with a kind of like clear idea of what he's going to do when he gets the ball.
He also doesn't go down because somebody's within 2 feet of him. And then when he's down sitting his backside waving his arms around in the air like he's directing traffic for 30 seconds, when he goes down, if he doesn't get the foul, he gets up and carries on playing.
Yep.
I thought obviously we just discussed, I thought Toure was one of the people at fault for their first goal. But equally, I think when he stepped out of defence and had a couple of runs, they didn't know what to do. They didn't know where to go to the ball or hold their formation and try and block off a pass for him. So it was like parting of the Red Sea. He just kept going through.
You're completely right. They seemed to be, they had their men they had to kind of cover. And Toure comes forwards. And they're all kind of half going, until he's already passed them.
Yeah.
And he's quick enough to, like, get away. Like, we said on the podcast last week that we were surprised at Toure's pace when he had a kind of 30-yard run with someone in the Stana game against a Ghanaian striker. Tonight, even with the ball at his feet, he was really, really quick. It's impressive. And as you say, if he was slightly at fault for their first goal, his run, his drive through the middle of the pitch completely kind of created the opportunity that we had for Griffiths' second goal. Oh no, sorry, our second, Griffiths' first goal.
It was just, for me, the number of good things about the performance was, obviously I've criticised Rogic's fitness, but I would praise the team's fitness in general. To play at a relatively high intensity for the bulk of that 90-odd minutes that the game lasts. Getting back to the point that Brendan Rodgers keeps making in all his interviews about they've been working on the strong mentality to say when you're playing at this level, there will be passages of time when things go against you. Their ability to come back. You know, to go to 3-2 so quickly after the second half started and still get to 5-2 in the game. Testament to that. The positive decision-making by Brendan Rodgers.
I think that's about 3 big games he's positively changed the course of the game.
Yep.
With his substitution.
So what are your expectations for the second leg? Because the odd thing, I mean, what was that? We had 22 shots, 10 on target, 5 goals. They had 7 shots, 4 on target, 2 goals. Oh, there was also, I have to make reference to it, 4-2. There was a fantastic save by Craig Gordon.
It was good.
What's your expectation for the second leg?
I watched about 15 minutes of their game against Olympiacos last night, just out of curiosity. And something that struck me in that first 15 minutes was the atmosphere. The atmosphere at Israeli games, it's quite intense, like maybe when you see the Cypriot teams play.
Yeah.
It's a lot more intense than Astana, even if Astana had about 35, 40,000 and this team only have about 16. The stadium's quite like maybe Wigan Stadium or Tynecastle. It's quite tight to a pitch, kind of four box stands and quite steep stands, but the atmosphere was, it was pretty good, to be honest. It was pretty loud.
You know, without getting into the politics of the rights or wrongs, they themselves, that's probably a consequence of they themselves see themselves as a people, as a bit of an embattled people, and I can imagine they're very keen to the anything representing the state of Israel does really well. So those two things together, of wanting the world to see that their team can succeed and feeling like the world's against them as an embattled people, those two things probably is what makes them such a passionate crowd.
Yeah. And I think their kind of fan culture has taken a lot from like Greek fan culture and like Italian, you know, ultra tifo fan culture as well from the 90s. Just from, I have an Israeli friend actually who's a Maccabi Tel Aviv fan.
Right.
And he'd often pass me like a YouTube videos of their fans. It's pretty intense stuff. So you'd kind of hope that we'll try and actually, to be honest, after about 20 odd minutes, I kind of skipped through the game kind of, and after about 20 odd minutes it seemed to kind of die down a bit, the whole kind of atmosphere, and Olympiacos were playing a ball about. So hopefully you just want Celtic to be have two defensive guys in front of that back four.
Yep.
I wouldn't want any more than one fullback going up at a time, really.
Yep.
If Tierney's got the ball, I want Lustig or Janko to be in with there too. I just want to be pragmatic in this game, to be honest.
Well, as I said before, they need to win 3-0 or 4-1. Yeah. I mean, I don't attempt fate, but you just think if we can score a goal, the chance of them being able to score four against us.
But even like three goals, it's going to be hard.
Yeah.
Three goals. I know. If everyone's heading away, you know, corners and crosses, and we're tight, we're not. If we're tight in front of, if we have two guys in front of the defence, and we're not leaving much for them to, you know, attack in the centre, and they're putting it out wide and crossing it in. If O'Connell and Turi are just heading everything away, you know, I think we can just kill the game, not give up too many opportunities. I can't see them, this is tempting fate so much, but in that scenario, I can't see them score three goals.
I can see us scoring a goal.
Yeah.
I mean, even under the poorest of times under Ronnie Dyer, the one thing actually we've been doing the last few seasons in European football is scoring away from home. We may have lost games, but we have been scoring goals away from home. So we've got players who've got, obviously got confidence that they can.
Yeah.
They can do it.
I would maybe have Eaton and Brown sitting, and I'd probably have McGregor in front of them. Not that high up, but allow him to have a few pot shots.
Because as we discussed, McGregor's, is he not our best European scorer in the last 2 years or something like that?
And he's going to run more than Rogic. I prefer Rogic as a player, to be honest. But he's going to cover more ground than Rogic. He's going to have a few pot shots. He's a half-decent passer. Have Beaton and Brown just covering the area in front of the defence, killing the game off. Beaton's a good passer of the ball, obviously. and he also kind of, he's quite good at calming it all down. He has a bit of composure about him, plays nice passes. I think we'll go through. This is tempting fate so much, but if I would have thought we'd be going through if we'd won, you know, 2-0 tonight.
Yeah.
So we have a better score than that now. I think we're through.
Excellent. I'm pleased to hear that. I need that reassurance. But you know, the good thing already under Brendan, myself and the guys around, at 3-2, we were so annoyed with the goals because they were soft goals. But we were all saying that we felt the team would get it back to 4 at least.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And obviously to get it to 5 was even better. I don't know if you know, there was a bit on Radio Scotland. They were playing the after the game. They were, you know, the press conference with Brendan Rodgers, and there was something where somebody asked him a question that we didn't get to hear what the question was. And Brendan more or less said, "I've no idea what you're talking about," and it just seemed to end the press conference. So I've sort of subsequently discovered that Joey Barton made some comment about, well, at least he wasn't having a mid. Had he spoken to Brendan Rodgers or something like that? And he said something about, no, because I'm not going through a midlife crisis and frequenting tanning salons, even if I can get the bloody words out, and teeth whitening things. So tonight, after all of what we've just discussed, that we've taken 40 minutes to discuss, in a 10-minute press conference, some arsehole from The Sun thinks that a relevant question is to ask Brendan Rodgers about Joey Barton's midlife crisis question. The arrogance that in all of that it's relevant to ask a question about a shithole of a club where the fans let their own version go bust. These are a bunch of diddies who are going to struggle to finish in the top 6. Earlier tonight, waiting on you, setting up for you, I saw Sky advertising 4 Old Firm games and the Celtic Rangers games return. Well, I'm sorry, Sky, Celtic Rangers games haven't returned because Rangers are bust, and this is a different Rangers, so there's no return, there's no Old Firm, and I really don't think Rangers are going to finish in the top 6, so you can stuff your 4 games up your arse because there'll only be 3. So taking all of that into consideration, why a journalist from The Sun thought it was relevant at all to ask a question about a fuckwit club is beyond me, and a fuckwit player.
They're not sports journalists. A couple of times we've kind of touched upon this, and that they're unable to actually analyse football.
Great.
I remember when you had the conversation with Tom English, and I don't think he really got your point, where he responded, you were kind of being diplomatic, but kind of talking about the quality of Scottish sports journalism.
Mm-hmm.
And he responded by saying, but Harry, if you look anywhere around Europe, with the possible exception of maybe Spain or something, the quantity in Scottish papers, you won't find it anywhere else. Yeah, but the quality is awful. And what they're actually discussing is not sport. This is like the Sun or Mirror gossip column about celebrities.
Mm-hmm.
This is what these guys are. And they shouldn't be in a press conference, a Champions League press conference, if that's their question.
No, they shouldn't be. I mean,
teeth whitening. Like, it's just nonsense.
It's a nonsense, tittle-tattle, gossiping question that is not relevant to a Champions League game. I just can't ever see the relevance. And this is the bit about why I'm sure the journalist himself must be a Rangers fan. Because only somebody who's a fan of that club would think there's any relevance to the comments of an aging midfielder who'll not see out the season and has a reputation based on the fact that he can open his mouth rather than pass a football. It's all about that false equivalence. That everything that they have done since they formed their new club has been about making reference to Celtic because they're wanting to put themselves on a par with us.
Yeah,
and that's to reference the comments of a fanny in a Champions League game when, as you say, they should be analysing where was his question about the substitutions and the impact that made on the formation and the system that Celtic were playing. Where was his question on that? Apart from the type of question he would ask is, it was very brave to make substitutions, wasn't it? You know, that's the sort of level. It would not be, talk us through your thought process on why you decide to bring on Janko when you're chasing the game. Talk us through the changes you made to the system. They will never ask a question like that.
Every time a foreign team, whether it be a Champions League team or a national team, come to Glasgow, every single time, what's it story in the paper? Buffon doesn't think that the atmosphere will bother Italy.
Yeah.
Or Xavi's a little bit nervous about the, you know, crowd at Parkhead. It's the same question every 3-4 weeks whenever they arrive. It's the same question for 20 years.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's no wonder only an excuse has managed to have a 20-year run with the same jokes. Because that's the culture of Scottish football. It's the same questions, it's the same jokes, it's the same pair. Take out the journalists. Getting back to your point of they're not proper journalists. I mean, obviously, some of them are. They're, you know, don't get me wrong. There are some who are good, but a big chunk of them. Getting back to your point of the perception. So Keith Jackson, how the hell Keith Jackson wins Sports Journalist of the Year? My thoughts are he wins it because he's got the mobile numbers of more people than anybody else, and so can pick up the phone. And not only has he got the mobile numbers, he's got the mobile numbers of more people who will then respond to his phone call or text message.
Mm-hmm.
Which is old-fashioned journalism of when every team played 4-4-2 and didn't and had the same system, same formations. Nobody had come up with zonal marking or man marking options. It was all, you know, in horizontal and vertical compactness. And nobody did any of that. Everybody just played 4-4-2. So all your football journalism 30 plus years ago was the gossip within the game. Who might be going? And you had no transfer windows, so transfers happened at any time. So the gossip within the game of who might be going, when and where, was all that matters. So your contact book did matter. But as you say, the world is a very different place now.
But sometimes when I tune into maybe a podcast in the BBC Scotland's football podcast or whatever, and I listen to the level of analysis on Scottish football compared to what I watch and listen and read to every day in Argentina, it's unbelievable. Like, the lack of in-depth coverage, like just the stuff about like Barton on Brendan Rodgers has been one of the main questions. Here they'll break down gossip as well, and that will be on some kind of quite light entertainment kind of football show or something.
Mm-hmm.
They'll get in a few hacks and chat about blah blah blah. The other 8 hours they're actually talking about tactics and the new kids coming through and everything. Like, it's also a kind of problem that Scottish football and Scottish media, you know, we don't actually have that many outlets. So we don't have that many options.
But a far more relevant question than the tittle-tattle of Joey Barton, a far more relevant question tonight might have been, Brendan, were you proud of the fact that you started the game with 4 Celtic Academy players on the pitch? Or, Brendan, what does it say about the Celtic youth system that you had 4 academy players and your Colts team is the only under 20 side to progress out of the SPL teams to have progressed to the next round of the Iron Brew Cup? That's far more relevant to the manager than there's a Tadger who plays for a lesser club. What's your opinion on the fact that he said you get a suntan? I mean, really? Really? I mean,
yeah.
But yeah, that, I mean, that's just in case people were listening to Radio Scotland, and the people in Radio Scotland didn't really seem to get what the question had been because they hadn't picked up. Celtic Research was in the press conference. And I think he's got if you've not heard it already, by the time people listen to this, his audio might be on by the time you're listening to this. So he was saying it was a Sun guy, and I spoke, and I also had a text from another journalist who was in the room, who said it was a stupid question that killed the atmosphere in the room, and everybody else thought it was a stupid question. So hopefully his peers might give him a kicking on the way out the door as well for asking such an arsehole question. But for me, that was the big thing. I was thinking, Robbie Nielsen said Celtic can just buy success. We had four academy players started that game. These things happen, and we don't even notice it sometimes. Our academy players are likely to have featured in a team that's put us through to the Champions League group stages.
Yeah. Which would be a similar quantity of academy players who would be playing for clubs that are famous for producing academy players.
Yeah.
Whether it be Ajax or Barcelona, Sporting Lisbon. It'll be rare that you'll get four or more.
Mm-hmm. So I thought that was excellent. I thought Touré communicated. You could really see in that, you know how every single Champions League game has 4 minutes of injury time. I've not been to a Champions League game that's not had 4 minutes of injury time. I think I've been at one that had five. But apart from that, every Champions League game had 4 minutes, and in that 4 minutes of injury time, you could really see him really shouting at people, having a go. You know, after Brown scored the fifth goal, he grabbed hold of Brown.
Yeah,
and obviously didn't want to overstep the mark because Brown's the captain, but you could see he was thinking he might be a bit overexcited here. He grabbed hold of Brown. Obviously, Brown then turned around and...
Yeah.
You're right. Brown then turns around and starts telling everybody to start concentrating. And
that's good. That's good.
So, yes, excellent. And we're going to get through.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I should tempt fate this much, but I'm currently looking at the prize money in the Champions League.
25 million euros was what was STV's point tonight that Celtic will make from qualifying.
Yeah, for winning this off, we get 2 million.
Right.
It's automatically. And we've already been given 700,000 for winning the other two.
I suppose the only thing to take off that is the £250,000 fine or whatever it is we'll get for the Palestinian flags.
I'll bypass that one.
there were a lot. Anyway, so there's that. One other thing, what's the prediction for the score against St Johnstone Saturday?
5-0.
Okay. On that, I'll leave it. I'll say, Mark Cooper, thanks very much.
Thanks a lot, Harry. Hail, hail.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that podcast with Mark. And I said I would give you some podcast recommendations at the end. So last week I asked for people to recommend podcasts that they are listening to. I must have got to that boring age in life when all I want to do is learn new stuff every day and new information. I always find it's easier to get involved in an argument or a heated debate, exchange of views with someone if you're well informed. So a couple of podcasts this week. Mike Michal Wood has said that he has his own podcast called the Migrant Crisis Podcast. Not had a chance to listen to it yet. It's about the ongoing refugee crisis in Europe. What he actually says is, well, that might sound somewhat dreary and depressing. I'm really proud of what I do. I think we add a level of insight and in depth into the issue that most media outlets don't. Well, Mark and I have just been discussing what some media outlets do and don't add in. So if you want to give that a listen. Also, a lot of love coming in for Malcolm Gladwell's Revisionist History. It's one that I was already listening to and I can heartily recommend. Also, a number of people recommending The Inquiry, which is a BBC World Service podcast. It's about a 45 minute review of particular issues that people can write into, and there is also the excellent More or Less, which analyses stats behind the news. And 99 times out of 100, I find that whenever any politician of any party comes out with a stat that they review, it's a bag of shite. Anyway, there'll be more podcasts that people have recommended next time on here. Obviously, there's the Celtic Underground podcast, and also you might want to listen to the Celtic View podcast. I know a number of people who listen to ours, our download stats are most of our, or not most, a good chunk of our podcast downloads come in the UK. Then the next percentage is the United States, then it's Australia, then Canada, then Ireland. So many of you will be expats just wanting to get as much Celtic news as possible. So you might be interested to know that the Celtic View now have a podcast. And we don't mind. We really don't mind here at Celtic Underground, as the world's longest running football fans podcast, that right at the very beginning, we established that the first question you would ask guests would be, what was your first Celtic game and who was your first Celtic hero? So we do not mind at all that Paul Cuddihy and friends have nicked that for the Celtic View podcast. No, do not mind one jot. Anyway, if you want some more Celtic chat, there's plenty of podcasts, Celtic fans podcasts around, but there's also the Celtic View, so Celtic FC have now got into the podcasting game. New music is Jargo playing away here. Links on to the site, podcast at CelticUnderground.net. If you want your Celtic story on, podcast at CelticUnderground.net. That will be on the next podcast. If you want to also email in your podcast recommendations for other people to listen to, do so on podcasts at CelticUnderground.net. Anyway, enough of me. That was him, Mark Cooper, with me, Harry Brady, and that is Jargo playing in the background with At Night When the Wind Calms Down. It's almost like we pull it together. This is me saying goodnight with At Night When the Wind Calms Down playing in the background. Good night and God bless. Good night.
Oh, the path not travelled, oh, it's a road not worn. So tell me, Johanna, is there love that you mourn? Well, I used to care, but now I'm dead. Inside my mind, I'm beside my head. When I call out, in my bed, when I fall out, it's stranger than BBC believes. I'm the newsreader's eyepiece. So where do we go now? Well, I feel so high, well, I feel so down. And I want to tell you, love, you've been in my heart, you've been in my mind. But what can I say now? Oh, you push me away now. With everything you mean to me, oh, why'd you go and leave me? You asked me to kill it, so I killed it, you see. You're as dead as a dodo to me. You asked me to kill it, so I killed it, you see. You're as dead as a dodo to me. Well, the path not traveled, oh, is the road not worn? Well, tell me, Johanna, is it our love that you mourn? Well, I used to care, but now I'm dead. Inside my mind, I'm inside my head. When I call out, in my bed, when I fall out, it's straight in BBC beliefs. I'm the newsreader's eyepiece. Oh, you asked me to kill it, so I killed it, you see. You're as dead as a dodo to me.